Welcome to Soccer 101, the show where we scratch the soccer itches you never knew you had. Today, we're focusing on the true architects of great soccer teams, the people who source the talent that shows up on the field, the scouts. This episode is inspired by a question sent to us by a listener named Chris Welter. Hi, Chris. They asked what a scout is, where they come from, what do they do, and for examples of some of the all-time greats. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today is a boy, but not a scout, who was possibly a Boy Scout. Taylor Rockwell, hello.
Hello, I was not a Boy Scout. I wish I could have been a scout, though reading more about scouts and what they're paid, I'm not sure that's even the case anymore.
We've said the word scout so many times already, it's lost meaning.
Scout.
We have scouted Scotland's finest. It's Graham Ruthven. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ryan Bailey. You scouted Scotland's finest and you came back with me? I don't think you've looked hard enough. You must be a scout for Everton.
Yeah.
No, we couldn't afford their finest, so we went with Graham.
Thanks, Taylor.
We didn't look very hard. Yes, you're right. But it's wonderful to have you, Graham. And of course, you, Taylor. And it's wonderful to have myself. I'll just say that. It's wonderful that we're all here talking. Isn't it nice? Why don't we get straight into it? Graham, let's have the headline here. What exactly is a scout? I know it's not Bruce Willis's daughter or Atticus Finch's daughter specifically. It has a role in soccer.
Yeah, so a scout is someone who, generally speaking, attends football matches, usually on behalf of a club, to collect intelligence. So most commonly that intelligence would be on players. A scout might be sent by a club to watch a player ahead of a potential transfer. The scout will assess things like a player's technical ability, their physical attributes, and also what areas of their game they can improve. And then that scout will often produce a report of some kind, and that intelligence will be fed back to the club for further analysis. A scout could also be scouting a team as a whole. For instance, Rob Page, the Wales manager, he was at the U.S. M&T's game against Saudi Arabia last week ahead of the World Cup opener in November. Page is obviously the manager in this instance, so he's decided to take on the scouting assignment himself. But ordinarily, if he was busy, the Welsh FA would have sent a scout to that game, and he or she would have fed information back to Page. Essentially, a scout's job is to look for things in players that cannot be seen with statistical analysis. So obviously, when you get to the top level, certainly clubs will have data analysis departments, tools like Y-Scout and deep data analysis will be done on players. But a scout is generally there to also provide the eye test and look at things like a player's personality. They might also be fed into any analysis of a player done by a scout. And their job is to save the manager or the coach's time by analysing more matches than they would be able to do in their own time.
You mentioned Y-Scout there, Graham. Could you just briefly explain what that is? It's a tool to help scouting, isn't it?
Yeah, so Y-Scout is essentially they collect and curate video footage from all around world football, and you can search that video footage you can filter it by player or by team or by type of player. They also have some analysis within that tool itself, so they'll provide some numbers and data, but really it's mainly used for the video footage that it provides. And so that means that someone sitting in England can look at video footage of a player from Brazil, South America, America or Japan or Asia or anywhere really in world football. But as I say, that scouts go to a game to provide an eye test, because Y-Scout will generally only show touches of a ball that a player has, so you're not really seeing stuff off the ball generally. And so a scout just provides a fuller picture of a player's ability.
Okay, so Taylor, how important is a scout in the soccer ecosystem? How important is it to a team? Could you do without them?
No, I don't think you can. I mean, certain clubs try to. Manchester United have, bypassed any sort of recruitment scouting. That's a joke on them. But I think they're incredibly important. First, from the tactical side, as Graham already talked about, when you have a person going out scouting the opposition and finding vulnerabilities, finding opportunities, it explains to me why you so often have managers, when they get a new gig, insisting that they be allowed to bring in certain staff members, because so much of that is going to be built on historical relationships and trust, and a certain scout is going to know exactly what that manager wants or what they're looking for or how they want to play, so that then those kind of opportunities can be maximized. But that also goes for player recruitment and scouting as well, that you want basically to have people in place that you know the system, that know what the manager's looking for or understand the club philosophy so that you can sort of streamline the recruitment process to keep both first team players coming in, but also academy players coming in. And that's where you can have academy scouts or more so first team scouts. But it really does allow teams to function efficiently and effectively, theoretically, because especially with the Premier League having the money that it does, smaller clubs in England, but also in the rest of the world, have to find ways to be competitive, ways to identify players that they can then sell on or get to ahead of time. And that's where having an elaborate scouting network with a lot of sort of information and data behind it is the way to go.
It is indeed. It's about finding value, isn't it, for building the squad, mm-hmm. Taylor, essentially. And I've actually been lucky enough to work with a few scouts quite closely. As I've mentioned on these shows before, I worked at Charlotte FC for a few years. And it kind of showed to me that scouts come in all shapes and sizes and come from all different backgrounds as well. For example, the director of scouting at Charlotte FC is a gent called Thomas Scharling, a very nice Dutch gent who was at PSV Eindhoven and AZ Alkmaar previous to coming to Charlotte. PSV scouted Irving Lozano, Alexander Zinchenko, and Andre Guardado as well, and a few others. His background was he started playing Football Manager, Championship Manager, on the computer. And when he was a teenager, quite a precocious teenager, started writing reports and sending them to Dutch clubs, who eventually said, this guy knows his business, he knows what he's talking about. So there was that side of things. And then there was scouts at Charlotte who tended to be coaches who moved into scouting, who just have an eye for it. But the main one, or one of the main ones there, was a gent called Steve Walsh, who was the scout who famously built Leicester's Premier League winning team and the team that went up from League One to Championship and Championship to Premier League as well. Famous for finding value, scouting players from the French second tier and getting, you know, very low value players and converting them into very high Premier League transfers and Premier League winners, indeed. And his background was in coaching as well. So, Graham, scouts do tend to come from different places, is my point.
Absolutely, yeah. It draws in all sorts of different people from different backgrounds. You have people who have been coaches. So one of the most famous scouts in world football is a man called Piet de Visser. He's credited with discovering Ronaldo and Ruud van Nistelrooy. And he was an advisor to Chelsea for a long time. And he played a key role in them signing Kevin De Bruyne, Arjen Robben, Thibaut Courtois. And his background is that he was a manager. He was a manager of countless clubs for decades in the Netherlands until he went full-time into coaching. I think a good scout should have a good understanding of the mechanics of the game, which is why a background as a coach is pretty handy. And most guides I've read have recommended that if you don't have a background as a coach, it's useful to have some sort of coaching qualification so that you have that grounding and understanding the sport. But you're right, people can come from all sorts of backgrounds. I have a friend who played for Stirling Albion. He then got a bad injury and he became a coach at Falkirk. And just earlier this year, he became Norwich City's scout in Scotland. And I know of someone else, similar to what you were saying, Ryan, with Football Manager, someone else who was a researcher for Football Manager. And actually, I think loads of people actually walk that path. But Football Manager, they employ researchers all around the world where basically their job is to scout players for Football Manager. And so the steps from there into the professional game, the actual game, is maybe not as big as you might think. So I know of a number who have done that same thing. But then you have Mark Warburton, who is currently he's a Football Manager, was Rangers manager, was at QPR. So he moved into management, but his first job was in scouting in professional football, and his background was in finance. So you get all sorts of different people, and I quite like that. Hopefully you get people with different outlooks and ideas, and hopefully that leads to some diversity as well through allowing so many different people from different backgrounds into this profession.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I really enjoyed about, with all that in mind, Graham, in researching this episode, was how you would get articles that were sort of like, here's what a scout does, here's some examples of scouts. Doesn't it seem fun? You get to go around the world and watch these players and report back, and you could be the one who signs Messi. And then there were other articles that spoke with actual scouts who talked about making like £4 for 14 hours worth of work and how much work goes into it. And it reminds me of stories like my D3 college coaches would tell about starting out and how they would live on like cans of beans and a mattress on the floor because it was so sort of like you'd be in this team 1 year and then the next season maybe you'd get a new gig somewhere else and you just kind of had to always be on the road. There was an anecdote in one of the BBC articles I read about I guess if you have fewer than 200,000 kilometers on your car in the first 3 years of scouting, then you're not doing it right. So it also seems like it is a grind. It isn't always this like, oh, you just get to go and fly around the world and scout players and attend games and make a bunch of money. I think there's a lot of labor that goes into it. And then maybe eventually you reach those peaks, but there are also plenty of people who are still trudging away in the valley, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think, Taylor, what's interesting is when you become a coach, you have to do badges and there is a system mm-hmm. to climb up the rankings. As far as I can tell in scouting, there's no such system. It's the proof is in the pudding. If you write good reports and you find the right players, that's how you move up rather than any formal qualifications or training.
Yeah, it seems to me like there's not a ton of regulation with it. So clubs can sort of offer you whatever they want to offer you. So, for example, that BBC article I was mentioning, it's following around Bournemouth scout Andy Penny. He'd been in football for 21 years. Here's your quote. After a day of scouting, Penny will normally file a lengthy report back to his superior at the academy, Matty Holmes, the former Bournemouth and West Ham midfielder. The reports includes detailed analysis of a player's strengths and weaknesses and always answers one key question. Does he play with a smile on his face? That's good. Penny gets £25 if a player is eventually signed by Bournemouth's academy, and a small monthly salary. He works for a building maintenance company in Poole in his full-time job. So that shows you, again, the reality of what scouting can be, but it also shows you that I think clubs can have as many people as they want working for them. They can have scouting networks or informal scouting networks of hundreds and hundreds of people. That doesn't mean everybody's getting paid a bunch of money. That doesn't mean, but just because the scout comes to see a player, that player is then getting signed by that club because that scout then has to go back and sell that player to the team oftentimes. Sometimes you'll have those big name ones who can sort of go in, talk to a player, recommend them to the manager, and away we go. But I think the rest of the time it is sort of a scattershot approach with a bunch of people out there turning over every rock they can find.
Yeah, and I think people might get the impression that, you know, like a young player, for example, they know a scout's watching their game and like the weight of the world is on and they have to perform in that moment. It's all or nothing. But from my experience, it's not quite like that in terms of the process, because they'll see a player 2 to 3 times live and they'll watch video and they'll do lots and lots of other background checks, so to speak, before even thinking of putting pen to paper on a professional player gram.
Yeah, and the other thing is a scout will very rarely turn up to a match, in my experience anyway, with the sole purpose of watching one player. Maybe that happens at the top level. I'm sure I remember like Sir Alex Ferguson. Did he go to a Lille game to watch Eden Hazard before trying to sign him? So you hear about managers maybe going out to, I'm sure Solskjaer did it with Haaland in terms of trying to sign him as well. But at a lower level, a youth level, scouts will go to games and they'll be taking notes on essentially every player on the pitch. So it's not like it's a scouting job in a single player. They cast the net very, very wide and far.
Yeah, Graham, I think you'll get like, yeah, go watch this game and like try to identify talent if it seems like there's like a rich vein there. But I think you will also get those sort of individual assignments, as you mentioned, and then sometimes those can branch off because here's another quote for you. Leicester City scout David Mills had been sent on a mission to watch a different player when his attention was caught by a whirlwind in midfield. He'd gone to Cannes to watch a center half, and then this little lad in midfield towered over everyone despite being just 5'6". It was a case of, who's nicked the ball there? Kante. Who'd made that tackle? Kante. Who poked that ball away? Oh, Kante again. And so they ended up signing, N'Golo Kante did Leicester, off of this scouting report. But that scout had been sent there to watch one other player specifically. So even there, even if you're sent for one player, you might end up having your eye turned by somebody else.
Yes, and one other thing I'll mention is, because I've seen it up close, Charlotte FC, one interesting facet is it doesn't always land on one person or even on the scouting team. As we've mentioned, managers will often go and scout players in person. And scouting looked very different during COVID as well, obviously, when there wasn't as much in-person scouting going on. So if you're interested in a little insight in how Charlotte did a lot of their scouting when they were setting up, for example, the scouting team or the director would assign members of the technical team games. You've got 6 games to watch this week. Here's a Bolivian second division game. Here's a Polish third division game. And they all had to watch these specific games which had specific targets in them and produce these reports. And it was really fascinating watching people in this office doing that, to be honest. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah, because I read a few things like that about watching the individual players that had been assigned or sort of looking at one player. And it made me want to do that, not to scout players, but just to sort of see the game differently. Because there was another one talking about scouting a goalkeeper and how people will just focus on the shot saved or the goal kick taken or whatever it might be. But then when the ball's at the other end of the pitch, they're watching the ball at the other end of the pitch. And a scout is watching the goalkeeper the whole time to see what positioning they're taking, how much attention they're paying, what's their communication style. It is really fascinating, the idea of just watching one player for an entire 90 minutes to see what they do. I guess I always assume it's just that Zidane documentary. It didn't occur to me that you could do that with every player as well.
Indeed. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to dig into more of what scouts are actually looking for, what they see that us mere mortals can't quite spot, and much, much more after the break. Soccer 101, welcome back. Graham, to get back to the question I asked before the break, what exactly, what qualities are scouts looking for? Is there something that they can see that we don't see? Do they read the game differently? Is there a quality you're looking for, say, in a youth player that you're not looking for in a more developed player?
Well, I guess they do look for certain things that we as casual fans maybe wouldn't look for. They are mortal like us, so it's not like they're born into scouting. And I would suggest that while there isn't actually a... there's not really a qualification system in scouting. If you go online, you can find a number of places where you can get courses. So a good place to start would be the PFSA, which is a Professional Football Scouts Association. You can become a member of the PFSA for £120 a year, and they offer a whole load of seminars and workshop courses which would give you a good ground in scouting and kind of tell you what a scout is looking for when they're assessing a player. So I think it kind of depends on the assignment that they have been given. So if they're looking for players who can slot straight into the first team, the criteria will be different from if they're looking for kids to be recruited by the academy. So if you're scouting young players, you're probably looking for fundamental qualities that give a player a good basis to build on, because it's very unlikely that you will find a teenager who is the finished article. So things like technical ability. Can a player control and pass a ball? Do they have a natural ability that would lend itself to the modern game? For a young player, things like composure and concentration, they might not be as important, because those things tend to be linked to the mind and the mindset of a player. And those things either come with age or natural maturity, or they can be taught to a certain extent. Obviously, some players have a natural composure. But things like physical attributes like pace and strength, those will also be assessed in young players. But I find when I was reading, doing my research on this, I would find when it came to those things that was often assessed with a view to doing some sort of forecasting rather than assessing the player as they are now. So as a player, too reliant on their speed at a young age, and what happens when that speed starts to fade later in their career, or more pertinently, does a player use their natural strength and physical attributes to cover up some deficiencies in their game? And what happens when other players in that age category catch up in that regard? So you might see a 15-year-old who is physically stronger and more dominant than his teammates, but are those qualities masking some other flaws in his game? And when those other players around him match him for physicality over the next few years, is he going to be out of his depth? That's the sort of thing that I found. And then if a scout is, just very quickly, if they're assessing an established player, the criteria might not be so broad. So they might be looking for a very specific player with a specific skill set to perform a specific role within a team that has been determined by a manager or a coach. And the scope becomes narrower when you're scouting established players, because you might not have time to mold that player. When you scout younger players, you might see flaws, but you're trying to look at the wider potential of that player to grow, and you have time to work on those flaws. But with an established player, you might not have that time. So speaking generally, you want something closer to the finished article. So the TLDR of that is basically it depends on the assignment, and that the scout will tailor their criteria depending on that assignment.
Yeah. And then it also depends on the scout's mentality themselves, because you can get that scout who maybe is a football manager or a Y scout enthusiast who sort of made their bones sending in these reports and having these detailed instructions. But then you might also get the kind of old school scout, and the one that will forever stay in my mind is in Sunderland Till I Die, when they send out a scout to watch a player and he immediately chalks him off. Does anybody remember why that player isn't good enough?
Oh, I don't.
because he's wearing gloves. And that means he doesn't have the right temperament to handle the physicality. So we don't need a player like that. So you will still get that old school mentality of, he doesn't have enough fight. He's a little bit too small. He's wearing gloves. He's got a snood on. I don't like any of that stuff. But I think that, again, represents the manager or the club that they are employed by, for better or for worse. But then you will also get that sort of more new school, the more modern one using more data and analytics. And then sometimes you'll get the blend of the two.
What I find fascinating is the differences between, say Taylor, scouting an under 15 at FC Dallas and PSG when they're going to buy Neymar. I imagine that the scouts at PSG like fire up PowerPoint, put their feet on the desk and go, yep, he does all the stuff, whereas the under 15 might be more of a sell.
Yeah, well, I think Graham did a good job of sort of laying it out, that with that under 15, you're looking at maybe not intangibles, but the sort of raw abilities there. Is there an intelligence? Is there like good positioning? Are there raw abilities? Is there like blistering speed that can be utilized? Is there good aerial ability or good size already that can be utilized? Are they overly reliant on their size? That's a downturn. So I think with youth players, there's a lot more to look at in the kind of raw ability and then their mentality and disposition. I also think there's a lot more leeway because you can sign people to academies or younger players to academies for significantly less money. And if you're a 12-year-old who has Manchester United come watch you, that right there is going to make you maybe pretty excited to sign for them for not very much money. I'm not even sure they can pay you money. Whereas if you're a 21-year-old and Manchester United comes looking at your club and you're already playing professionally, then there's going to be a more sizable outlay, you would assume. And so that means that I think there still has to be that detailed analysis, or there should be that detailed analysis. And I think that's the difference maker between Liverpool signing somebody like Luis Diaz, who comes in and looks like he's been in that system for 5 years, and signing somebody who comes in and just seems like they're off the pace. And they had the name recognition, they had the ability, it seemed, but when actually push comes to shove, when actually put into the system, they don't shine. And I think that can be the big difference.
They can't pay a 15-year-old, but they can buy a house for their family.
Yes,
that tends to be the Pogba ploy, I think that's called.
Yeah, hire them to be a gardener. Their gardening skills are so good that they need to be brought to the UK right away.
Yeah, that's tricky. And I mentioned the Neymar situation, Graham, a bit facetiously, but it's important to note that with a major multi-million dollar pound signing, that there has to be a business case made for it. So the scouts or whatever technical department it is will still have to make a business case to the owners, to the directors, to the board that this player is the right one for these reasons, unless you're Man United, in which case you just sign who you like.
Yeah, exactly. I think later on in this discussion, we might move on to which club has the worst scouts. And spoiler alert, I found that a little bit difficult to assess for the reasons you've just laid out there, Ryan, in that the signings that a club makes, especially at the top level, the elite level, are not always a result of the quality of the scouting. So you might actually have a good base of scouts who are making good recommendations and producing good reports, but ultimately the club has other factors to bring in when deciding whether to sign a player, like the commercial side of things, if you're going to sign Neymar. And so it's a little bit difficult to assess, as I say, which scouts are doing their job. It's easier to assess which ones are doing their job rather than which ones are not doing their job, essentially.
All right, Graham, so before we go negative, let's go positive. Who out there are notable for having great scouts?
So I think over the last decade and a half as a whole, Borussia Dortmund have had a lot of success with their scouting network. I think the most impressive thing about Dortmund is their reach is impressive. So they've got a good track record of signing players from Asia and Japan, from Eastern Europe, from within Germany itself, from the English lower leagues and the academies of English clubs. And the thing that Dortmund have done well is create this self-perpetuating loop where they use their past success to sign players. So Jude Bellingham is a very good example of this. He decides to sign for Dortmund over Manchester United. Man United offering him a higher wage, but he goes to Dortmund because he's seen how well Jadon Sancho has done there, and I presume other players as well. And so good scouting leads to more good scouting, in that the players that they are scouting and believe to be good enough are more inclined to sign for that club because they think they're going to get an opportunity there. I think I'm going to name Celtic as one of the clubs with the best scouts. So a man called John Park. He led their scouting network for a number of years. In that time, Celtic signed Virgil van Dijk, Victor Wanyama, Fraser Foster, Tom Rogic, who didn't make that move from Celtic but was very successful for them, Moussa Dembele, Christopher Ayer. So that's a lot of success for a club that really can't spend huge sums on transfers. And then another club with a very strong track record when it comes to scouting is Lille, which is just as well because they obviously can't compete with the resources of PSG and Ligue 1, but the players that they have signed early in their career include Johan Cabaye, Dimitri Payet, Vincent Enyema, Stefan Lichtsteiner, Adil Rami, Luka Dina, Divock Origi, Eden Hazard, and then more recently you have Jonathan David and Victor Osimhen as well. So that is a lot of talent to have come through that one club.
That is impressive. Taylor, any other nominees for famous scouts or great scouts? I always think of Southampton as an example, and they have that famous black box of data that they use to accompany their scouting network. And there was a point where Liverpool just bought all of their players.
Yeah, it's weird how it seems, if not cyclical, that it just comes in waves. Because there was that time with Southampton having that scouting department. Same thing with Porto having players that they would then sell on for like 100 million euros every single season. And I think they still do. But I think maybe they just get less attention because it's not quite as obvious as it was when, yeah, Liverpool were just signing every single Southampton player over and over again. Graham already mentioned one name that popped out. Piet de Visser has had a long career of signing very, very, very good players. But I suspect that with this, it's like there are famous scouts, but we probably don't really know of them. And I think it's one of those things where maybe they're not like high profile to the average soccer fan, but if you are in that industry or in that world, then there are like all caps famous personalities. And the best like analogy I can draw is in Parks and Recreation when Leslie Knope is obsessed with career bureaucrats and Liam Bonneville, the resident bad boy of the Department of the Interior. Like she knows all of the Department of the Interior people because she's in that world. It makes her very excited to know these people, to meet these people. And I think that's probably how it works in certain aspects of football as well. You might have some really famous people in that industry or some very, very respected and highly influential individuals that most soccer fans will probably never hear of.
Graham Carr is one that I always remember because
Graham Carr is definitely one.
he was at Newcastle when Alan Pardew was manager there, and because Newcastle kept going back to the French market, it became this talking point of like, okay, well, who's guiding them to France all the time? And so Graham Carr's name was mentioned a lot back then, and he seemed to have excellent knowledge of the French market, and they got players like Demba Ba, Hatem Ben Arfa, Johan Cabaye, Pepi Cisse, who he actually played for a German club, Chet Tayoti, I think, came from the Netherlands as well. But around that time, it felt like Newcastle were making a lot of good signings. I think Graham Carr is another one I would mention.
Graham, be honest. If he were named Ryan Carr, would you like him as much as you do because his name is Graham Carr? Come on.
No, I mean, I tend to gravitate towards things that are called Graham, like Graham Potter, Graham Lasso, Graham Crackers. Yeah, like all those things.
Who's your other favorite Scottish football analyst?
Is it Graham Hunter? That wears the sunglasses indoors.
There it is.
By that logic, Taylor, I would love Ryan Giggs, and I'm not so hot on him right now. But that's another topic altogether. I'll say, by the way, what my favorite scout is the network talent scout from Anchorman, who, if you remember, is leaning on the hood of his car with a pair of binoculars and a notepad, scouting Ron Burgundy and co. for the national news. That's apropos of nothing. That's just how I picture scouts watching games, leaning on the hood of their cars with binoculars. Let's talk about the worst scouts. Let's finish off with that then. And Graham, we mentioned Manchester United a little earlier on. And I don't know whether we can necessarily historically say they have got the worst scouts. Famously, the class of 92 coming through, maybe that's more to do with their youth development than their scouting, or maybe they're one and the same thing. But in modern times, you've got this Man United squad, which the rationale behind signing players isn't entirely clear, the structure of the club isn't entirely clear, and you've got this mishmash of a squad that's not as well developed as their blue neighbours, let's say.
Yeah, so as a reference earlier, it can be a bit trickier to know which clubs have the worst scouts because a club's transfer activity isn't necessarily the result of the club's scouting. But with Manchester United, actually, and this isn't in my notes, I'm kind of going off the top of my head here, but at the end of last season, there was quite a bit of reporting around their scouting network. Jim Lawler left at the end of the season. He'd been at Manchester United for decades, going back to really the start of Sir Alex Ferguson's time there. And there was a lot of reporting that Manchester United had essentially, their scouting network had got a lot smaller, not only in terms of scouting players abroad, but also in terms of scouting players on their own doorstep. You know, you see a number of the best players from the northwest of England now going to clubs like Manchester City. I mean, Phil Foden is a good example. Would he have gone to Manchester United's academy 20 years ago? I think there's a good argument that he would have. So yeah, I think Manchester United is a good example of a club that has allowed their standards to slip in terms of scouting. I'd suggest Everton as well, but this is where it gets a little bit confusing and the waters get a little bit muddied, because they've actually made some good appointments in terms of people. So Marcel Brands was their sporting director for a couple seasons. He had a very good track record at PSV, and the aforementioned Steve Walsh was at Everton as well, yet Everton's transfer strategy was a mess when the both of them worked for the club. So I don't know how much of that is on Mashiri, the owner, or people higher in the food chain maybe overriding their recommendations. And I would say PSG is another good example, where there's a disconnect between the grassroots scouting and the leadership of the club. PSG, I think it's reasonable to assume, have excellent scouts. They have unearthed so many good young players. Ferland Mendy, Christopher Nkunku, Moussa Dembele, Matteo Guendouzi, Odson Edouard.
Tim Weah.
There's a lot of players. There's a common thread there that none of those players ended up actually playing for the first team. So yeah, I don't know if the scouts can really be blamed for that, but in terms of a disconnect between the two sides of the club, I think PSG are up there.
Yep, I think Graham nailed it. I think we can't say for sure, because we just don't know how, if they're like, I struggle to think of a club having just actually bad scouts, aside from Sunderland, who I already mentioned. But I can't think of many clubs that would just be like, like he misses every single time, but we keep him around. I think it always comes down to how much weight do clubs give to their scouting? How much are they incentivized to actually bring in players? Because you might have a scout who's found this Uruguayan 16-year-old who can be that next big central midfielder, but then, is he going to sell shirts? Is he the commercial sponsor we need? We can just go out and sign this 24-year-old who's going to immediately sell shirts and give us more corporate sponsorship. So we're going to do that. I think it comes down to how much are you actualizing that. So the scouting department, and I think there are clubs that do a much better job of that than others. And I think Graham has hit upon two who don't do a particularly great job, at least of late.
Wonderful stuff. I think that just about wraps up Soccer 101. We've learned an awful lot about scouting, about the people who build our teams, and about the people who find the talent of tomorrow. Taylor Rockwell, you a happy bunny right now?
I am a very happy bunny, although I do have a couple questions for Graham, if you don't mind. Graham, real quick, your favorite type of cracker?
Graham, yeah. It's
That's
Graham
what I thought.
Cracker. Mm-hmm. As Americans say, Graham cracker.
Thank you. Your favorite unit of measurement when it comes to weights?
I can see where we're going here.
Your favorite person with the last name Norton. That's the last one for you. Favorite person with the last name Norton. Yeah.
Ed.
there we go. He zigged at the end. Well done, sir.
Favorite inventor of the telephone? We can keep going if you'd like. Anyway, thank you very much.
Steve Jobs.
Oh, yes. I like these sideways answers. Graham Ruthven, thank you very much for your contributions on Graham questions and scouting questions.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
Taylor Rockwell, pleasure as always. Good, sir.
Pleasure was mine. Ryan, I feel like you've watched The Sopranos. You should know that Tony Soprano is going to find you and yell at you, because we all know the inventor of the phone was an Italian. He makes that very clear, and I can't believe you've forgotten.
If you talk to a Scottish person, they invented absolutely everything.
So, that's because it's true.
Yeah, that's a conversation. Here we go. We should probably shut this thing off now. But
Antonio Meucci. There it is. I got it.
Thank you, listener. Well, we'll be back on the feed with another one very soon. But for now, we'll catch you later.